This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Tech Talk. Good afternoon. Frida Liu here. As the anniversary of Back to the Future approaches, Culture Pop's Matt Armitage thinks it's time to celebrate the sci-fi stories that are finally being made a reality. Now, to be very clear, I don't want to hear the word hoverboard mentioned today.
Hi, Frida. And you won't unless you're the one who mentions it again. We are starting with Back to the Future, though, as we hinted in the intro. There was another invention in the movie that we've all been swooning over ever since, and that's the self-lacing trainers. Nike has been promising delivery of these shoes ever since. That's 28 years. And now, finally, it actually is. On November 28th, the company will be launching a shoe called the HyperAdapt 1.0. No price information at the moment, but you can expect that it's going to be very, very expensive. It doesn't look like that weird, rigid moon boot that was in the Back to the Future movie. It looks like a regular sort of Nike athletic sneaker. But when you put your foot into the shoe, sensors in the heel activate and a motor in the bottom of the sole tightens the laces around your foot.
And how long has it taken to develop these shoes?
Right, well, as we said, 28 years. Mm. No, remember the days when it would take, you know, it would take about 5 to 10 years to develop a new car. Modern prototyping and design tools have cut that to 3 years. Some automakers are actually aiming to get closer to 18 months. And that's why we see car models jump from, you know, concept to production line very, very quickly. So when you bear this in mind, it may be a surprise to know that these trainers have been an 11-year priority inside Nike's secret Mia Hamm development lab on its Beaverton campus. The company hasn't given any hints in terms of how much it's invested, but I think we can safely say a lot.
Okay. Now let's talk about challenges and time. As you mentioned, why would it take so much longer to bring out a new shoe than a car?
Yeah, exactly. Shoes, especially these sort of high-end athletic shoes, are getting pretty high-tech. They use super lightweight smart materials. They've got grippy soles, custom insoles. They poach their designers from NASA. The shoes have energy return systems. They have pronation tuning. But despite all of the techs, they're still largely analog. Some people have put basic fitness trackers in them, including Nike in the past. And Lenovo, the Chinese tech company, has released its own smart trainer concept. But generally, there are not a lot of electronics in shoes other than, you know, those horrible kids ones that squeak and squawk and twinkle.
Because you need to know where they are.
Okay. What, your feet or your children?
Your children.
Anyway, because there's a reason for that. That's because shoes are mostly taken up with our feet. You know, there's not a lot of space left over for automation unless you want to be walking around with clown shoes or suitcases on your feet. So it's taken a lot of time for materials to catch up with the vision of that movie from 28 years ago. And early versions of the shoe, they were heavy, they were bulky because they had to have a heavy motor in to cinch the laces. The motors were very slow. You know, it was like watching a four-year-old tying his laces. It would take like a minute or two minutes. And they also needed to be plugged into the mains because batteries were not small and powerful enough to do the job. Apparently in the Back to the Future movie, Michael J. Fox had to carry a brick-sized battery pack in the back of his pants just to make those fake shoes work.
So why would a conglomerate like Nike be so obsessed with this vision from a movie?
Well, because they got bored with all that football and sport nonsense. No, there are sound commercial and athletic reasons. Basketball players, for example, often spend more of the game on the bench than the court. So keeping your boots tightly laced so that you can get into the game at a moment's notice, it's not actually good for your feet. Similarly, endurance and distance runners should be adjusting the tightness of their shoes throughout their run and their race, but not many athletes do. Marathon runners are not going to stop to lose
time.
No, exactly. And if high-level athletes aren't looking after their feet, why are sort of normal people going to bother? So there is a huge potential market out there beyond the sneaker freaks and, you know, what they think is cool.
And why do you think this will be a game changer?
Well, this is conjecture on my part, but I think that they're going to be looking at ways to make the whole shoe more responsive to its wearers' needs. I think we'll be seeing shoes which have motors that can adjust shock response or insole fit. that can fit closely as you run up a hill and then give your toes a bit more wiggle room as you come down. I think we'll see things like, you know, a football boot with a kicking surface that adapts to the weather, skate shoes, for example, with adjustable friction. And of course, we'll see this in other clothing as well, compression systems coming into vests and shorts and pants. And of course, as soon as you add a Bluetooth chip, that means you'll be able to adjust them from a smartphone or a remote control. So as you were saying, you don't stop when you're running because it's a time issue. But if you can adjust your shoes from a little controller in your hand, yeah, that's something that people will do.
So we're not just talking about feet today, right? What else has science rescued from fiction?
Well, I'm not sure how many people noticed this story from a few weeks ago. One of the great Bond movie myths is the supervillain's undersea lair. So nestling on the seabed and full of nefarious types, you know, planning terror and world domination. And now it seems that China is actually building one. I'm not claiming that they will be using theirs for the purpose of terror or world domination.
Unless
of course
it was North Korea.
I wouldn't even suggest that.
Okay.
The facility is a plan to be an underwater research platform that will house workers for up to a month at a time at a depth of 3,000 metres. So it is really deep. Officially, the platform's purpose is to help search for and extract natural resources from the seabed. It's been ranked as one of China's top 10 scientific priorities. And it is possible that the base or bases would also have military applications, given that, you know, the South China Sea has become increasingly politicized in recent years. Where the base will be, how much it will cost, and when it will be ready are still in the information black hole. I certainly think we're going to see similar efforts from the US and from Russia in the near future as well. I mean, China's not going to be the only power with these permanent undersea bases. And of course, I'm planning to lease one from the Chinese. And of course, you've got nothing to fear from me as long as you keep paying.
From the sea to the stars.
Yes, next week, our old Tech Talk chum Elon Musk has a big event planned where he's going to tell the world about his plans from Mars. Now, Mars colonies are a science fiction trope, you know, it's a hard place to live, as we know from that Matt Damon documentary last year. Musk himself is an occasionally polarizing figure. Some people think he's a real-life Tony Stark, and others think he should be living in China's undersea lair, plotting against 007. He has recently been dropping hints about Mars colonies, and despite the recent setbacks with his SpaceX rockets, on the 27th, it's thought he will lay out some kind of blueprint for getting people to the Red Planet and how they will live and work when they get there. So people familiar with SpaceX claim that the ships involved have been nicknamed the BFR and the BFS, which stands for Big Freaking Rocket and Big Freaking Spaceship, except they use a word that isn't freaking. Getting people there is going to be one issue. Getting them home is maybe going to be the bigger problem. And of course, they're going to need more than a ground sheet and some potatoes to survive. Still, none of this should stop Elon Musk from getting passengers on his big freaking ship by 2024.
And we have to end with a flying car.
Well, no, we don't. A lot of companies are still working on the flying car idea, but in these days of drones and self-driving cars, I think the idea has probably had its day, especially when you hear that Airbus is planning to do away with the car park completely. It claims its pilotless battery-powered passenger drone project called Vahana will reach testing stage in Singapore, oddly enough, sometime next year. So the idea is that these drones will operate like buses or taxis, and they'll be at a similar cost as well, and they'll provide short hops around cities by air. They're going to be battery-powered, so they'll be electric-powered. Who knows, in a couple of years' time, you could be clicking for an Uber in the clouds, and Uber will be claiming that they can't be taxed because no country owns the air.
There you go. Matt Armitage from culturepop.com. He'll be joined by Jess Sandhu for Geek Squawk right after this. Tech Talk, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.